Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, autism, the conversation is everywhere, whether we're watching Jenny McCarthy talk about how she presumably cured her son of autism, or we're listening to presidential candidates say they want to deal with the alarming rates of autism. Our next guest is someone we've talked to a number of times. We've invited him to come back this morning. Good morning, Dr. Gregory Liptak.
Good morning.
He's a professor of pediatrics from Upstate and an expert in autism. We're really glad to have you here. I want to point out to listeners, remind them something we've mentioned before, that you are one of 8 experts who've really written the guidelines on diagnosis of autism.
Yes, through the American Academy of Pediatrics.
There you go. So, I mean, you are the guy in the know, so I'm glad you could be with us this morning. Now, you know, we've talked about a number of headlines before, but we've really never gone to the basics of autism, so that's what I'd like to cover this morning. One thing I know is that autism is on the increase, and until 10 or 12 years ago, I never really heard of it. Where is all this coming from?
Well, clearly there's been a dramatic increase in autism that some people even call an epidemic. We don't know exactly why we're seeing so many more children with autism. Some people say that there's what we call some diagnostic substitution, so that 15 or 20 years ago, a child will be diagnosed as having mental retardation, but today that same child will be diagnosed as having autistic disorder.
Uh-huh.
But I believe that in addition to that, there's truly been an increase in the number of children who have autism.
So it's not just that we're giving more of the name and the label, it's that there really are children that are developing this.
Yes.
Is it something, I mean, yes, I know we've talked about a genetic connection before, but so many parents say that they never even notice anything until the child is, what, a year old or 2 years old. Why could that be?
It's very difficult to diagnose autism before 12 months of age. And some parts of autism, for example, Asperger disorder, really don't present until the child enters school. So part of the problem is how severe the autism is. If it's very severe, it's easier to make a diagnosis. If it's less severe, it's more difficult. In addition, there are a number of children who have what we call autistic regression that develop normally until they're about 12 to 18 months of age, and then they have dramatic regression. They lose their language, they lose their social skills. And that's why people have suspected immunizations as a cause, because it's around the same time that the MMR vaccine is given.
Okay, and I do want to come back to that because that has to do with the Jenny McCarthy controversy as well. But let's stick for the moment. You're talking about children with more severe, less severe, and so forth, and that's the spectrum. We hear of autism as a spectrum disorder. So describe that to us a little more completely.
There are 3 official diagnoses for autism. Autistic disorder are the children who are most severe. Asperger disorder are the children who are most mild. And in the middle is something that we call PDD-NOS, pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like a catch-all term to me.
It is, exactly.
There you go. And on that spectrum, we have people who barely are affected at all. They grow to be adults. They may not ever even know that they have autism. Is that true?
Right. There certainly are people who are very successful, mm-hmm. who have either what we call high-functioning autism or Asperger disorder, and no one has ever made a diagnosis, and they do perfectly fine in the world.
And we might think of them as being just a little bit antisocial, but certainly they are functioning as any normal adult would, and
right.
maybe even better than some normal adults.
Right. Well, people say that inventors like Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, poets like Emily Dickinson had Asperger disorder.
Really?
Yes.
How interesting. All right. Then the other end of the spectrum, you have children who are diagnosed, but then they must grow to adulthood, some of them anyway, and they really have got to be, they've got to have special help all their lives, don't they?
Yes.
And does that also relate to intelligence? Certainly, if you're talking about people like Thomas Edison and Emily Dickinson, they were intelligent people.
Right.
And so what is the correlation there between autism and intelligence?
Well, again, it's a spectrum. We have children who are very severely affected and have very severe intellectual and developmental disability, which, by the way, is a new term for mental retardation. And we have people who are very high-functioning, who are geniuses, who have IQs above 160.
So the autism is not necessarily a conversation about their level of intelligence.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let's go back. I think back to the days I was teaching school in the 70s. And, you know, what you're telling us is that autism has been around for a very long time. Why didn't I hear of it when I was teaching school? And where were those children? Because I don't remember them being in my classroom.
Well, in the 70s, children who had severe disabilities typically did not attend regular school. They were put off into separate schools. Many children, in fact, were even put into institutions if they had significant mental retardation. And then people really weren't tuned in to conditions like autism or Asperger disorder, and so people weren't making the diagnosis. There always have been children who are a little bit odd, who are a little bit asocial, who didn't interact well with their peers, but they didn't have a diagnosis.
And so without the diagnosis, there was nothing else to do with them.
Right.
Uh-huh. All right. Is there a cure?
There is no cure for true autism.
All right. But there are people who claim, and that's what takes us to Jenny McCarthy and her claim that she has cured her son of autism. What do you think has happened there?
Well, first of all, if you take 100 children who truly look like they have autism when they're 2 years of age, there will be a number of them, 4 or 5, who over time will get better. By the time they start school, they look like they have Asperger disorder. By the time they're in high school, you can't tell that there is a problem. So children can get better just on their own, even if they look like they have significant autism when they're younger. And I've seen that myself in a number of children. In addition, if you provide a lot of intensive intervention with children, for example, there's a program called ABA, or Applied Behavior Analysis, you can show significant improvements, including improvements in IQ score. And it's possible that the McCarthys have spent a lot of time with their children doing this sort of intervention.
Well, I do know that Jenny McCarthy has spent, I mean, she's devoted whole sections of a house. I think she even bought a house that was specifically devoted to helping her child. So she has done that. And we've actually talked about that ABA system before on HealthLink On Air. We know a little bit about it. I mean, it's actually an expectation management program, isn't it? Where
yes.
Children are told step by step exactly what to expect and how they're to behave.
Yes.
And it seems to work for a lot of them. You were here when we talked last spring about a study that had been done that had to do with, as I understand it, parts of the gene that you could turn off and turn on. And there was an assumption that children with autism, I think, had these tags turned off, and you were trying to figure out ways then to turn them on. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about this applied behavior? Are you trying to turn on some of these tags for them?
Well, we don't know exactly how applied behavior and other intensive programs work. That certainly is one way. We may be turning on genes or turning off genes that shouldn't be on when we do this intervention. In addition, the brain relies on connections. One part of the brain connects to the other, which connects to the other. In children who have autism, these connections are not normal. As a result, you have a brain that works very inefficiently. A number of people hypothesize that these intensive programs actually help the brain prune itself to get rid of unwanted connections so it becomes more efficient.
I see. So using that knowledge then, are there ways we could begin developing that we would prevent autism from starting?
Well, we're still in a very early research phase in terms of turning genes on and off. But the hopeful part of that study was that you don't have to replace an entire gene. You just have to find a switch that will switch a gene on or off to help at least some children who have autism. Now, clearly, there are other children who have autism who have part of a gene missing. And that's a very different story.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is that autism isn't a single condition. You can have autism if you have Fragile X disease, if you have tuberous sclerosis, if your mom had rubella when she was pregnant, which is another reason why it's really important to immunize people. And then we have a very large group in whom we don't know. So it's not a single condition. There are many different causes for it.
Well, let's go back to what you were just saying then, a mom who has rubella. That does take us to the heart of the vaccination question, doesn't it? And that there are so many parents who think that autism is caused by vaccinations, and so they wholesale decide their children shouldn't have them. That's causing actually a public health question, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, both in England and in this country, there have been outbreaks of measles in communities where not enough children were vaccinated. And the primary reason for parents not to vaccinate their children is because they're worried about autism.
And so if they take that and translate it to no vaccinations, they're actually creating a bigger problem for themselves and for the public at large.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we've been talking recently about public health and what some of those issues would be, knowing that there's going to be a public health master's degree offered here in Syracuse. People with an interest in autism might be interested in such a degree, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you have your MPH, don't you?
I do.
Very good. What kinds of research are being done. What is on the horizon for autism?
Research is being done in all aspects of the condition. For example, finding better ways to treat children who have autism, who have symptoms like aggression or obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Okay.
People are working on ways to improve the way the brain makes connections. People are also working in basic science areas, for example, in Fragile X syndrome, which is a syndrome that can cause autism. People are looking at ways to modify the proteins in the brain to make the brains of these children more efficient. And in that case, there may even be a cure for Fragile X, which means that there will be fewer children who have autism from that condition.
Which would be fabulous, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Gregory Liptak, we've appreciated your time this morning. What I love is that you're always so able to translate the headlines we read about, and autism is not something that's going away anytime soon. So I hope we'll have you back soon.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. And listeners, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.